And we return. It is today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman on this Thursday afternoon. Well, we begin today with the story of Habitat for Humanity's Women Build program. In Miami-Dade, the endeavor not only provides modest homes for low-income families, but gives other women the chance to make change by building them. With us now is homeowner Annatrice McInnes, who lives with her family in a Habitat Overtown home. Welcome to you.
Welcome.
Annatrice.
Thank you.
Okay, also in the studio is Tamika Jackson. She and her daughters live in a women-build Habitat home in Liberty City. She also gives back with what's termed sweat equity hours to build homes for others. Welcome to you, Tamika.
Thank you.
And we also have Habitat for Humanity of Greater Miami CEO. He's Mario Articona. He's with us. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
So let's jump right in, Tamika, and just explain this. You're doing these sweat equity hours. Tell us what they are and how it makes you feel to be giving back.
Well, you have to accrue for single homes. You have to accrue 250 hours, and for the marriage homes, it's 500 hours. But it's just awesome to learn on how to build your house. So if anything, you know, goes wrong, you know how to do it already. It saves you money, and it just gives you a lot of knowledge on everything.
And, okay, Mario, you want to explain the sweat equity hours, too?
Yes, a little bit. First, one of the misconceptions about Habitat is somehow that we give away homes, and nothing could be further from the truth. Habitat is very hard work. And so our homeowners, like the two that we have here, they agree to work the 300 hours or 250 hours of sweat equity in exchange for the ability to purchase a home at the end of the process at a 0% interest. So in exchange for a traditional mortgage, they work their sweat equity hours. So this is a requirement of all Habitat homeowners.
Okay.
And I think it's the real key to the success of Habitat, because you're not just making a financial investment. You are also putting in, you know, 250 sweat equity hours is very hard to accrue. It's a lot of missed little league games. It's a lot of birthday parties and things that you give up more than a year sometimes to accrue. So it really makes the families appreciate what they're getting much more.
It really does.
And Annatrice. Is that how it's pronounced, Annatrice?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. You've been in your Overtown home now for 5 years. Do you remember how it felt when you first moved in?
Yes, it felt real good.
There we go. She's a little closer now.
Yeah.
Yes, it felt real good. It's nothing like living in your own home, and it was a blessing to me because I was out of my family the first one to be a homeowner. And when you walk into your own house, that was just, oh my gosh, it was a blessing to put your keys. And then just like Mr. Mario said, when you do the sweat equity hours, you appreciate, you know, the blessing that you're being, that you have. And when you can give back, like, you know, 250 hours, I call it an investment. Because once you invest in that, then you look at your home, you just thank God that it's there. And you help build it. And I thank God for the opportunity to be a homeowner.
And an interesting component is that not all the hours are worked on their own home.
No.
Usually around the last 50 that are worked. So at one point during the program, you have worked in the homes of 10, 12 different people.
Right. Yes.
And so you create a bond, you work alongside, yes, with volunteers and those homeowners. And so you're creating a community from the get-go. You move into a neighborhood that you've already know, you right. already know the yes. folks, and you help them build their home. So if you see the kid riding around on the bike, maybe up to no good, said, hey, I built your house. I know where you live. I know your mom. And you create this sense of community that has made a really big impact in Miami-Dade.
What's the average time to construct these homes, say, slab to finish?
It varies depending on volunteer opportunities and sponsors, but for the most part, it's between 3 and 8 months, depending on on who the sponsor is, how many volunteers they can bring out. You know, most of the labor that Habitat puts into their homes is volunteer labor. Last year, we had more than 11,000 volunteers work on Habitat homes. So it's not an exact science. It's always a moving target.
Tamika, what's your construction specialty when you do your sweat equity? What are you best at?
The high beams. And I really like it, yes.
You like working high, huh?
Yes. It's very hard work, but it's something to learn about. It helps you learn the structure of the house. It helps you learn how to just balance the beams. If you need any, if something should happen to go wrong, you know how to start on it. And that was amazing to me. It was the first experience for me.
And I suppose, of course, these homes are inspected and up to code.
Of course. No, absolutely. We meet all old code requirements. And just for clarification, you don't get to purchase your home until after you're done with your sweat equity.
Exactly.
So you have to complete that. So she became a master carpenter. She's already been
so
in her home.
So you can't call in sick. And
Tamika, you're talking.
Yes, Tamika, yes. I'm sorry, has already completed. And one of the beauties is she's no longer required to work any hours, but she still does and comes in for Women
volunteer.
Build.
Yes.
No requirement. This is now her home. Yes. And so it just speaks to the program that, you know, you're given an opportunity and you want to give back.
One thing when you were just talking about the homes are inspected, well, I was surprised when I read on the website that of the 27 Habitat homes in South Dade, none sustained any damage when Hurricane Andrew hit.
There was a very famous headline and it was a gruesome picture, an aerial shot that ran in the Herald, and it was total devastation and the Habitat homes just sitting there, and it said, Habitat 24, Andrew 0. Because we build them right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Anitris, I see you just got your high school diploma.
Yes, ma'am.
And you're about to go to college.
Yes, ma'am.
How much did getting your home contribute to your decision to get your diploma and go back to college?
Well, it gave me a positive outlook on life, because if you just keep your eyes on your prize, and my prize was to make a difference in the community. And I think that I did make a difference in the community, because even though I'm 50 years old, I encouraged a lot of people, and it's never too late to go back for your high school diploma. And I was it was a privilege to let Habitat know, because they want to know the steps that it made to make a difference in your life. And that was one of it. And I wanted to do more. I wanted to be a different homeowner, to do more things for Habitat.
Right.
And when I went to school and then I signed up for college, I feel good.
And do you still volunteer for Habitat? I don't know when you'd have the time now, but do you find any more time to volunteer still?
Yes, they still call me, and I do meetings. I do a lot of outreaches. And wherever I go at, I talk about Habitat, because it made a difference in my life. So I would like for it to make a difference. I could be in McDonald's, Burger King, church. I just thank God for Habitat, because it gave you another boost of life.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, that's easy enough, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. And email is radio@WLRN.org. How about contact information in Miami-Dade County for people who have interest in Habitat? And I'll also give a number for Broward.
Certainly. For information on how to donate, apply for a home, volunteer, they can go to our website, which is miamihabitat.org, or call our office at 305-634-3628, and we will guide you to the appropriate department.
And if you're listening in Broward and want more information, the Broward Habitat office is at 954-396-3030.
Mario, what are the requirements for qualifying for a home under Habitat for Humanity? Are there set requirements?
There are set requirements, and, like I stated, when you purchase a Habitat home, you have a mortgage. So you have to show the ability that, you know, you have an income and you will be able to maintain this mortgage. So there This is for low-income families, which are at 80% or below of average medium income. So the minimum income requirement is about $24,000, and it goes up to the low 50s, depending on the size of your family. So that, in addition, you have to show that you are not in deep debt. So when people apply for the family for the homes, if sometimes they don't qualify, they're not just sent on their way and say you don't qualify. They say you don't qualify now, but if you do this, this, and this, and come back, you can have another bite at the apple. And we have a lot of repeat folks who, our family services staff works really, really hard to help the applicants meet the criteria. And we want everyone to succeed. And a testament to the success of the program is there are approximately 970 Habitat outstanding mortgages right now, and our foreclosure rate in 25 years is less than 1%.
Mm. What's a typical mortgage that a person would carry?
It varies because it cannot exceed 30% of their income. We can only sell our homes at either cost or appraised value, whichever is lowest. But on average, and it changes, including taxes and insurance, it's about $750 for a three-bedroom house. It's a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm. It's a very good deal. Very good. Yes. Tell us more about the Women Build Program. I saw that it began in the early 90s, and then it lost its momentum or something, that it wasn't revived until 2009. What happened? And tell us more about it.
The Women Build Program is a Habitat International program, so it's a worldwide program. In Miami, it's been extremely successful, and it is a program, as the name implies. It's a house built for a woman, by women, exclusively. I've been kicked off the site several times.
Yes.
And it's just, it's really terrific. And you have groups of coworkers or folks from, houses of worship or just friends, women that come and build their homes. Incredible work ethics. And they really want to help a single mom succeed. And right now we've done, I believe it's 14 women build homes. And our current coordinator, a woman by the name of Stephanie, who's also a board member,
yes,
committed to working on 10 houses in 5 years. And she's well on pace for that.
And are a majority of the women involved new to construction work? Like, Tamika, had you ever done any construction in your life?
I've never done any construction. And as we're speaking, like, my daughter, they also have Habitat Rehabs. So I was able to help, also I've been an inspiration to my daughter for her to get her own. And she's living in her place now and helping her with her extra, with her hours and everything. It's been such a blessing. And you meet new people. The volunteers are amazing. Mm-hmm. Nice people, and they continue to come. So I just want to give a shout out to the volunteers. Thank you. Been such a blessing.
So it's like a big family.
Yes, it is.
It is.
Everybody come together. Mm-hmm. It's a Christian organization, so it's very awesome.
Does Habitat work at all to rehabilitate existing structures?
Well, the majority of what we do is new construction, but yes, we also will purchase foreclosed or abandoned properties. We'll take donations, and we will rehab homes. And that gives us an opportunity to improve neighborhoods. And Habitat has a lot of different programs. We have a program called A Brush with Kindness, mm-hmm, in which we will go to someone who owns their home, not a Habitat homeowner, just a homeowner out there who maybe is a little down on their luck and their property is not looking as well. We will come in and say, can we paint your house? Can we help you do some landscaping? We want to help you, your home, look better. And after the skepticism wears off
of something for nothing,
what are you selling?
Yes.
They really embrace it. And there's an effect when you put a Habitat home on a block. It's usually the nicest house on the block. And the neighbors all of a sudden are like, hey, you know what? Let me fix my place up. And we're seeing a transformative effect on Liberty City, where we've had a huge, huge impact. Block by block, things are, I wouldn't say that all the ails of Liberty City are cured, but we're making a very positive impact on our homeowners.
How does Habitat come across the lots?
It's a very good question. There's various ways. We have donations. Banks are also sometimes very generous with properties that they can't sell. But our best partnership has been with Miami-Dade County. Miami-Dade County has a program called the Infill Program, in that they have lots of many lots that have either been abandoned or that they have gotten back through tax sales. And they'll say to us, we will give you this lot if you commit to putting a home in it within 24 months with a family. So they're taking what's a liability for them because they have to maintain it and so on. And we are in turn helping a family and putting a taxpayer in. So it's a win-win for everyone.
And how are you financed, Habitat for Humanity? Is it just private donations or corporate sponsors?
We have sponsors? Some very generous corporate sponsors, a lot of private donations. We also have the revenues from the outstanding mortgages because Habitat is the lender and holds the mortgages. But even though it's at 0% interest, there is still principal that comes in. And we have also partnered with government agencies. Any grant that's out there, we usually go after. And in fact, we just finished working with a rather large grant from the Recovery Act that allowed us to build 164 homes in 2 years in Liberty City.
What about HUD?
Yeah, it was through HUD.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mario, how long have you been with Habitat for Humanity?
Only 2.5 years. Before that, I had some minor involvement with them, but I jumped right into the big chair, and it's the best career decision I've ever made.
And what brought you there?
I was very happy in previous jobs, but you know, as cliche as it sounds, I wanted my efforts to mean something. And as problematic as the day-to-day can be, when I get to spend time with homeowners and when we go to dedication ceremonies, you can really feel good that you're making a difference in the lives of,
yes,
of many. And it's, yes, and it's exponential. It's really wonderful.
How does someone qualify for one of these homes? There must be a big waiting list.
We make lots available, and we put them on our website, and people come, and if they're interested in one of the lots available, they will fill out an application and go through what I explained already, the whole financial component. If
right,
they're selected, they have to attend a series of workshops, 10 to 12 workshops, ranging from wills and estates to home maintenance. We really want to give the homeowners the tools to know what they're getting into. And then, of course, work their sweat equity. After that, then they have the honor of purchasing their home.
And you say less than 1% default.
Yes, it's been really remarkable.
And do you stay in touch with the homeowners after the homes are built and after? I mean, I know you hold the mortgages, but other than that, do you help them?
We do, and one of the keys to holding the mortgages is that if someone gets a little behind, you can make that personal call. When you're working sweat equity, tracking that, the homeowners get very, very close to our family services caseworkers. And those relationships go on forever. We get invited to weddings,
awesome,
and birthdays, and Anitra's invites us pretty
tell
much.
Tell us, Anitra's, tell us what it's like staying in touch with them.
Oh, it's a pleasure, a wonderful pleasure, because they're just like our families. The families, because
yes,
when you, Habitat is just like, it's a family. If you ever want to have a home, go to Habitat, because Habitat, it makes you, they open you with open arms, and they're counseling, and we pray, and we
yes,
invite each other when we go through, you know, when we have something like Mr. Mario said, we get invited to weddings, birthday parties, because I just got married.
Oh, congrats. Oh,
a year ago.
Well, you've had a lot of changes.
Yes. So it does make a difference. And I always invite them. And when I be at work, and I work at Jackson, and I also gave Jackson to come out to Habitat, to come out to have people at Jackson to volunteer. And we also, what we did, I have a lot of friends that have homes from Habitat at Jackson Hospital, mm-hmm, and I just talk about them, and when it was a privilege to meet Mr. Mario, I always shoot him an email,
yes,
and tell his secretary to tell him that I love him.
And it's an important, the Habitat homeowner is is the person who works at Jackson. It's the public service aide at the City of Miami mm-hmm. Police Department. It's the cafeteria lady at, you know, Jackson High School. It's the people who make our community go, but they don't have the visibility of someone who's more affluent, perhaps. And there's a great need, and I'm glad that we're doing our little part to fulfill it.
Before the program, Anitris, you were saying about how people feel discouraged, that they can't own their own home, and what's your message?
Well, I always have this statement, what helped me, you overtake it, don't let it overtake you. And the lady asked me, what is it? Matter of fact, Mika asked me, yes. What is it? I say, whatever's stopping you for discouraging you. So that's where I come in at. And when I go to the meetings, that's why I love doing the outreach, because it's a lot of people get discouraged for, you know, they done been through a lot of programs and they either didn't make enough of money or they didn't have the right credit. So I get the opportunity to explain to them, to let them know what Habitat does. And even yes. though when they get discouraged, I like that type of group for I can encourage them. And I always give my testimony of how he helped me for. You know, and I tell them I love Habitat, and it gives you what you need, because if you want it, just like Mr. Mario said, it's not a handout, it's the hand up. And, you know, you get the opportunity to live in a brand new 3-bed, 1-bath house, what you built, and that's the beautiful thing about it.
And Tamika, a penny for your thoughts.
Yes.
Yes. As she said, as Miss Anitra said, when I first started, I went to the meeting and I met her, and she was the one that encouraged me, and she stayed in contact with me from then to now. So it's been truly a blessing. And also, like, with family and friends, they're volunteering and helping from the beginning to the end. Yes. Habitat, awesome. Like I said, everybody, we're still in contact right now. Very lovely people. Very. And I will really recommend you to get in touch with Habitat and yes. get a home. That's the goal for you.
Yes. Mario, before we run out of time, how about contact info once again?
Sure. It's our phone number is 305-634-3628, and our website is miamihabitat.org. All the information you need would be there.
And also, if you're a Broward listener, you can go to Broward Habitat for Humanity. They have a website there. And also, their phone number is 954-396-3030.
And we'll have all the links on our website, WLRN.org.
And on the Facebook page.
And on the Facebook page. And, well, how long did it take you to become a homeowner?
A recipient. It didn't take me long at all. As a matter of fact, it only took me 3 weeks get the approval. After you signed the application and everything, so it didn't take long at all. And they were very, like, with the home visit and everything was all in plan and all in order, and it went fast. Some vary, you know, depending on the situation of the person.
But that was just to get the approval to then begin
to
working.
Right.
Where are you employed?
Exactly.
Tamika?
I'm sorry?
Where are you employed?
I'm employed at Bascom Palmer Eye Institute.
Oh.
And I've been there for 6 years. I'm also in school. I'm supposed to start again for lab tech in June. So it's been a blessing. And also, I might add that when you get a home and everything, it does help your credit. It just helped a lot of things that you were blocked.
Well, you're gaining equity also.
Yes, you are. Yes.
I would think it would be so good for your feeling about yourself, too, for your self-esteem. Yes. And
that's one goal that I can put that I can mark down that I made. And it also, like I said, gives an inspiration to others, and it help people in the community. Mm-hmm. Make you look at life differently. Yes. And it is a stepping stone, and it makes you want to, you know, further your education and just anything else that you felt about yourself.
Well, we certainly want to thank the three of you. It's been very encouraging to hear your stories.
Yeah.
Anitris McInnes, also Tamika Jackson, and the Habitat for Humanity of Greater Miami CEO, Mario Articona. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Thank you. It's been
thank
a pleasure
you,
to have you. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Food and Dining is next.
And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. I'm Bonnie Berman. It's time for Food and Dining with chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer. So, Linda, are we going green today?
We are definitely going green today. Wouldn't it be great to have a stunning kitchen that's also eco-friendly?
Yes.
Well, you know what? We can have both.
Okay.
And I've asked our guest to help us out. She's an architect, and she built her own house and kitchen, which are fabulous. And she's the principal of the Upstairs Studio architectural firm. It's Mary Carmen Martinez. Mary Carmen, thanks for being with us. Welcome.
Hello, Linda. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you with us. So, also with us, our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. Fred writes the wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column, and you can read his wine column in today's Miami Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, here's a puzzle for you. What is red and white and green all over? And the answer is wine.
Green. Eco-friendly wine.
Green wine? Okay.
Green wine.
Well, let's go to Mary Carmen Martinez. Creating greener kitchens. You've built a new, as I mentioned just earlier, eco-friendly home. And your kitchen's beautiful. So let's talk about creating a new kitchen, if you're going to. And then let's talk about how we can reorganize our existing kitchens. So what are some basic tips here?
Linda, well, making your kitchen green is a great idea because in South Florida, kitchens are responsible for most of the home's energy consumption. It's only second to air conditioning, and in homes where the air conditioning is kept to a neutral temperature, such as ours.
What do you mean by neutral?
Close to the actual temperature outside. So you're doing mostly humidity control than you are doing cooling. And a lot of people actually prefer to be close to a neutral temperature. It's more comfortable than to be cold or obviously excessively warm or humid. And in homes that the temperature is kept at this level, then the energy in the kitchen, it is the highest consumption in the whole house. So looking at your kitchen to be green actually could be quite...
So you mean the kitchen uses the most energy in the home?
Yes. Yes, second only, again, to air conditioning. In northern states, second only to heating. So the kitchen area is the most energy consumption of a home.
Okay, so what are some ideas then that you put into your kitchen?
There are many ways of making a kitchen green, and I'll break it into three different categories. First and foremost is design. If you're beginning from scratch, for instance, you're building a new home or completely renovating a kitchen, then you want to design your kitchen so that it takes full advantage of natural daylight. The kitchen is the command post of the house, and some would argue that kitchen lights are always on. So if you can reduce the amount of lights in the kitchen or the amount of time that those lights are on, then you have gone greener.
So in other words, plan that kitchen with lots of window space.
Lots of windows and lots of doors to bring in plenty of natural daylight.
And I have to say, in my own kitchen, and I'm not going to rebuild my house, but there's not a lot of natural light. What can I do?
Well, if you're adjacent to an exterior wall, which most kitchens are, then I would urge you to maybe sacrifice some cabinetry and make larger window openings to the outside. If you have the opportunity to take down a wall between the kitchen and an adjacent space, such as a dining room or a casual dining space, then do the same. You take down a wall and you allow more natural daylight to come in into that space.
Okay, so now if I'm not going to take down a wall, and lighting is so important. I mean, actually, really, if the light's not over my kitchen sink or if it's not over my workspace, it's difficult. So what kind of lighting would you suggest?
When selecting your lights, you look for fixtures that are fluorescent or LED.
LED is new. We haven't been able to buy those until recently, I think.
It's true, but they have come a long way. The fluorescent and LED lights of the past that had the cold or the blue light to them are no longer the lights you can find today. These lights can even be dimmable. So not only do they reduce the amount of heat that they put out, but they have a great quality of light and today can be dimmed.
Okay. So what are some other ideas now? We've got the lighting, you said. So what are some other basic tips?
Add plenty of natural ventilation. A kitchen that can ventilate naturally will not only be more efficient because you can reduce mechanical ventilation, for example, your exhaust fans, but it also will be far more pleasant to work in. A well-ventilated space is healthy, too. They have better airflow, less humidity, and stagnant air.
How would you ventilate? What are you talking about?
Again, windows and doors. If you have windows and doors in a kitchen space, and these can be operable and opened, then the space is ventilated. Also, if the kitchen is not enclosed by four walls and a door to this space, and it's connected to the rest of the house through door openings or even clear stories, the space is also naturally ventilated.
So if you're putting windows in, make sure they can be opened.
Yes. Right. Another, you know, dovetailing into that is to also make the spaces a little higher than normal. A kitchen tends to be a hot space, and hot air rises.
So you want to have higher ceilings?
Correct. Yes, right. Higher ceilings will allow for a more comfortable space below.
Okay. Now, what are some other simple steps we can take to redo our kitchens if we're not going to be building a kitchen from scratch?
Right. If you don't have the opportunity to design a new kitchen from scratch, then you look at the appliances, or we call it the systems of a kitchen. You look at the appliances and the plumbing fixtures. This is the second way to make your kitchen as green as possible. Appliances today are far more energy efficient than they were in the past. When shopping for appliances, I think one should only be looking at appliances that are rated Energy Star.
It'll have that on it.
It will have a little star sticker, right, that mm-hmm. qualifies them as Energy Star rated appliances. The Energy Star program was established by the EPA in 1992 and under the authority of the Clean Air Act. These Energy Star appliances incorporate advanced technologies and use up to 50% less energy than standard appliances.
So, actually,
if you're looking at a kitchen stove, are you better off with an electric one or a gas one?
Well, first, that would be the preference of the chef. But in South Florida, because gas is still cheaper than electric power, I would say if you're looking at electric consumption, definitely gas. If you're looking at it environmentally, some people would argue that one, you know, could be cleaner than the other. But that is, I think, a different argument altogether. I think down in South Florida, a gas appliance would be preferable to an electric appliance.
You know, I don't have gas, town gas, on my street. It's at the top of my road, but it's not on my road. But I wanted to cook on gas, so I've had bottled gas. And I've had that for over 20 years. And in that amount of time, I've only changed those bottles maybe 5 or 6 times, which is amazing. It's cost me almost nothing to cook. And I have 15,000 BTUs on my stove.
What is that bottled gas?
LPG. Propane. It's
propane.
Liquid propane.
Mm-hmm. And they put 2 big tanks by the house. So when one's out, I just switch it over to the other while they deliver a new one. But I went back to look at my records, and maybe 6 times in 20 years have I bought gas.
Is that the only appliance you have in your house with gas?
Yes, my stove. But I cook a lot, so.
No, but I mean, I think it is very wise. We have, for example, in our house, we have our instant gas water heater is fed by the gas. We have a dryer and the stove. And those 3 appliances throughout the year will consume less than $400 in gas.
Wow.
What about a gas air conditioner?
I've never heard of that. Is there one?
She's shaking her head.
No, I'm not familiar.
My neighbors had one when I lived in West Kendall, and that used an awful lot of gas.
Well, I expect it would.
Maybe that's why you don't hear of them anymore.
I guess not. Well, you mentioned appliances and plumbing. So what kind of plumbing were you talking about?
Well, when selecting the plumbing fixtures, you look for fixtures that have a low flow. Low flow water would reduce the consumption of water considerably, and it will not affect your performance at all. Also, Energy Star, going back to Energy Star, appliances such as washers and dishwashers use far less water than standard ones.
You mentioned to me something about having a dishwasher that had 2 levels of it. What were you talking about?
Well, I think that one of the things that we need to do also when we look at our appliances is we should select appliances based on our lifestyle and our homes rather than a magazine picture. For instance, a family of 2, does not need the same size refrigerator as a family of 4. And the same thing can be said for a dishwasher. There are dishwashers today that are compartmentalized, that are half the size of a standard dishwasher. You can have 1 or 2, so that when you're running your dishwasher on a regular basis, you're running it at a full level rather than almost empty, and therefore being more energy consumed.
Right. Well, that's a good idea, because otherwise, if you want to be energy conscious, you could wait 4 days to start that refrigerator, that dishwasher.
And you might need to run it twice because the food might not come off the dishes.
Is it more energy conscious to wash dishes by hand if there are just a couple of people or use a dishwasher?
If you're thinking of pure energy, yes, because you will not be using electric power. However, you're using far more water to wash by hand than you do when you use a dishwasher.
So it's one or the other. Well, I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking about cooking green with architect Mary Carmen Martinez. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking about cooking green with Mary Carmen Martinez. She's the principal of the Upstairs Studio architectural firm. She's been giving us some really wonderful tips on how we can make our kitchens more eco-friendly. Earth Day is coming up this month, and it's time to talk about how we can make our homes greener. With that, I have in front of me, before I go to dinner in minutes, I've got this cooking pan.
Looks like any old pan.
Well, does it really?
Yes.
But it's got a white inside.
Well, yes.
Okay, but it's okay, so it's called the green pan.
Oh.
And
wait a minute, it's white, so it's green?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh.
In a nutshell, yes.
That's the wonder of radio.
Right, exactly. But because it's a ceramic pan, and it has a nonstick formula. Now, we've been told that the nonstick skillets and all pans give off fumes. And so they've been working on this. And this one does not give off any toxic fumes. Now, get this. Are you ready? It's PFOA and PTFE free. And Mary Carmen is shaking her head because she knows what that means. But PTFE is a toxic chemical used in many of those nonstick pans. And then the PFOA is the chemical they use to make that. So this pan has none of that. So the workers who make the pan are not endangered, and the people using the pan are not endangered.
And who makes it?
It's called the original green pan.
Oh.
That's what it is. And you can find it at many of the stores. You can go online and just Google the original green pan. I cooked scallops in the other day. I didn't put anything in it. No spray or oil. 1.5 minute each side. They were beautiful, crisp, and brown. And the one I think I liked the best, I washed it out in soapy water in 2 seconds. That was the best part.
That is one of the most important things.
So a 10-inch skillet's about $30 is what it is.
And so it comes, I guess, in different sizes.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole line of it. Yes, exactly. But anyway, so with that pan, you can make dinner in minutes. But today's dinner in minutes is not even going to heat up your kitchen. It's Tuscan bean and tuna salad with a zucchini and tomato salad side dish. Italian canned tuna is really, really good. If you're near a specialty food store, pick it up and have it on hand because it's much better than some of the others. Or else just buy a very good quality white meat tuna. And so you drain it and you mix it with some cannellini beans and some red onion and a salad dressing. And it's really simple but very, very good dish. And then I put a little parsley on top just to make it look pretty, taste a little better. The side dish, I cut up some zucchini into small pieces, and I just microwaved it on high. And, you know, the microwave doesn't use very much energy at all. So if you can cook in the microwave a little bit, that's a help. I cut up some tomatoes, put it in the same size as the zucchini, mixed it all together, olive oil, sprinkle of oregano and parsley, and that's it. It's a whole meal, doesn't heat up your kitchen. And here's another tip. If you're going to use dried oregano, I buy fresh parsley and the dried oregano, and I chop them together because the oils from the parsley will release the oils from the oregano.
Oh, that's a good hint.
And that'll help it to taste a lot better. And that's it. So that complete recipe and a photo is at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. And Fred, are we drinking green wine?
We are drinking green wine. I'll tell you, it's the latest thing. When it comes to going green, nobody's going to beat winemakers to the punch. No siree. They'll go to what seem like ridiculous lengths to outdo each other in that regard. Of course, first come the organic wineries, and they use no chemical fertilizers, no chemical herbicides, no chemical pesticides. So the grapes they grow are certifiably organic. But the problem is that if they bottle the wines that way, they might grow stale and turn color in a few months, even if they're not opened. You'll see a few wines like these on supermarket shelves, but not many. To keep white wines from turning dark, to keep red wines from losing their fruit, most winemakers say you just have to add a few sulfites as preservatives. So what you find in most of the wines, organic wines in the stores, are wines that have grapes that are organically grown, but the wines themselves are not technically organic. And then the next level up is biodynamic grape growing, and that they really take that to great lengths. They don't treat just the vines, they treat the entire vineyard, and they brew herbal teas to nourish the soil, and they prune their vines by the phases of the moon, which actually makes sense. And they plant certain flowers among the vines to attract beneficial insects and that sort of thing. Now, this is great, but the problem is that it can drive up the cost of grape growing, obviously, and make the resulting wines too expensive. I've seen $100 bottles of wine like that. So a new and probably more practical concept is gaining favor now. It's called sustainable grape growing. And here they avoid chemical pesticides and so on when they can, but they will use them sparingly as a last resort rather than lose the crop. They recycle their water, they recycle their bottles and that sort of thing. And actually, they've gone another step, and they make a point of paying their workers fair wages and protecting them from harmful chemicals. But if you're really into this and you want to get biodynamic wines, you won't see it listed on the wine label usually. So if you want to support the sustainable concept, you'll have to check out their websites first.
So where do you find out what's sustainable and what's biodynamic?
Well, if you want to buy a Kendall Jackson wine, you go to kendalljackson.com, and it'll tell you in their website.
I see.
Or whatever other, Behringer.com. They all have websites.
So you really have to do some homework. You can't go to the store and see it.
Very seldom will you see it on the label. It's not a legally defined concept is the problem. It's just something that a lot of people are doing.
Okay. Well, talking about sustainability, we're with Mary Carmen Martinez from the Upstairs Studio Architectural. And she's been giving us great tips. So sustainability, what about the cabinets and the wood and the countertops and that kind of thing?
Right. We've spoken about the design, and we've spoken about the appliances and the plumbing fixtures. The last component, or the third component, to make your kitchen green are the building components. If sustainability is important to you, then you will want to buy or build your cabinets using FSC-certified woods. FSC certification is important because it is an indicator that the woods used to make your cabinets and countertops and floors, etc., was harvested sustainably.
Okay, so the FSC means...
Forest Stewardship Certification.
Okay, and will it say it on the wood? I mean, how do you know?
It will.
And it will
this
say
is,
it.
Yeah, this is a standardized...
a legal...
Yes, qualification.
Right.
So you will find that when you buy floors, when you're looking at cabinetry, whether you go to Home Depot or to a custom cabinetry shop, they will let you know. They're able to set aside the FSC certified woods. You can also look for countertops that contain recycled or reclaimed materials. There are many examples of green countertops out on the market. Some are composite stones, some are recycled glass, some are reclaimed woods and metals.
So would granite be out? No, I mean, so many kitchens have granite. Is that a no-no or what?
It is not a current green material, because it doesn't have a component or a percentage of recycled or reused materials within it. Now, there are some quartz countertops and stone composite countertops that are made from granite products that are recycled and then reconstituted into these countertops.
Okay, and I noticed that the glass, I've seen countertops that are glass, and then I'm always afraid that if I drop one of my pans on it's going to crack the top.
And that perhaps could happen. So, yes, there are some materials that are more fragile than others. That's why some of these composite materials that are out available today, even though they might be fragile, they might break under a pan dropping, they can be easily fixed, which is another way of being green. A kitchen that can be refurbished, can be touched up, and can be maintained is less often renovated. So therefore, it's green because it stays longer in your home.
And there's not so much going on with it. And another thing I always notice, tell people, is that if you've got a great big burner, don't put a small pot on it because the heat is escaping around the pot. So put the pot on the small burner. That's why they have those different kinds of things. And
very true.
The other thing is to unplug some of your appliances if you can. You don't need to be plugged in all the time.
Nothing should be plugged in your house all of the time.
Except the refrigerator.
Yes.
And
yes.
The freezer. Yes, right. Okay.
But all of the other appliances definitely should be unplugged when not in use.
Okay. Well, it's been really a fascinating week. Great, great advice. Thank you, Mary Carmen Martinez. Terrific advice. Tell us about, where is your studio? Where's your architectural studio?
I'm located in Coconut Grove. I have had a practice in Miami for over 16, 17 years. And we have a small award-winning boutique architectural studio dedicated to what I think is good design and sustainable design.
And it's called the Upstairs Studio Architecture, and you're the principal of it. Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
I'm glad we didn't have to drink a green-colored wine.
Oh, I could find you some of those if you like.
I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Great. Join me next week for more food news and views.
And thanks for joining us this hour. Topical Currents is produced by Richard Ive. Technical direction from Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. Join us Monday for a special Earth Day program. Eco-friendly technology isn't new. We'll speak with the author of Powering the Dream, The History and Promise of Green Technology. Of course, tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell on the South Florida Arts Beat. And you can try our free audio archives and program downloads at the website WLRN.org, and also more information at the Topical Currents Facebook page. And now to today's calendar. On this day in 1775, 238 years ago, Patriot Paul Revere begins his famous ride from Charleston to Lexington, Massachusetts, to warn of impending British troop movement out of Boston. One if by land, two if by sea. And on this day, 1923, 90 years ago, the original Yankee Stadium opens in the Bronx. Yanks win over the Red Sox 4-1. It was constructed for $2.4 million. The new Yankee Stadium cost $2.3 billion. One more while we recall the one person to be elected twice to both the vice presidency and presidency. On this day in 1996, 18 years ago, former President Richard Nixon suffers a stroke and dies 4 days later in Manhattan. And we leave with a thought from Billy Martin, who had five stints as Yankee manager, and in 1979 punched out a Minneapolis marshmallow salesman named Joseph Cooper. No relation. From Billy Martin, I may not have been the best Yankee to put on the pinstripes, but I am the proudest. This is Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. Excuse me. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Next, it's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.